Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and for all the good press that Facebook has been getting lately as a social networking site that's not just for college students anymore, and a place where even the presidential campaign is being waged. People are comparing the number of Facebook friends that Obama has compared to Clinton. My next guest is sounding a very public note of disdain. Maybe you saw the op-ed by Alice Mathis in the Times called The Fake Book Generation, in which she says that the supposed buddy site actually leads to social isolation. She joins us now. Alice, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So you write a warning: if you're planning on following the corner of this map that's been digitally doodled by my 659 Facebook friends, that means your Facebook page, you're going to end up in the middle of nowhere. What do you mean by that?
Oh, well, basically, I mean, what I mean by that is that rarely are we using this website to demonstrate to anyone how we really know each other or where the history of our relationships or who we are really as people. The idea isn't really to document our lives for the public consumption, but really what it is that it's a forum for the exchange of kind of interpersonal individual inside jokes, or to kind of put on a performance for our anonymous audience to kind of put up just to make ourselves kind of look like funny or likable people, and kind of fabricating things about ourselves very often,
right,
but also kind of integrating that with real factual information about ourselves.
You just graduated Dartmouth this year. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, thanks.
And I guess you were probably writing to a lot of parents who might be trying to mine Facebook for serious information about their kids, and saying to these parents, hey, folks, this is really just a joke, right? When we keep updating our status, we're doing it in funny ways to make people laugh. When we poke our friends, as the phrase goes, you know, we're just doing it to hang out and fool around. This is not a serious reflection of our social networks or a serious reflection of our personality or the state of our sociology. Is that your main point?
That is absolutely very, very well put, and exactly what I'm trying to get at with this. I mean, really, when it was initially established, we were really just communicating with one another. I mean, it was a structure that was designed by a college student who really kind of understood the kind of the language of college students and the kinds of things that we find funny, and gave us a lot of opportunities to make one another laugh. I mean, with this poking thing that you have pointed out, it's very strange. And even within the structure itself, the friend details is an opportunity to explain how you know someone.
Right. So when somebody's a friend of yours on Facebook, there's a line for how they met. And so, for example, a friend of mine one of her friends is her husband, and for how they met, their relationship, they hooked up, right? Which is just her jokey way of saying we're married.
Right, exactly. And, you know, you have a lot of kids, young people who claim to have hooked up in the same, but really, I mean, they might just be two best friends, or, I mean, I've even seen, like, you know, people claiming to be cousins who also claim to have hooked up, and when there's this opportunity to elaborate on how it was, which is absolutely a ridiculous thing to ask someone to do, to publicly explain how that was, they wrote, like, oh, it was illegal in however many states. You know, it's really just kind of been appropriated as a tool for comedy.
For comedy. Or another example from your article, it says, we even make a joke out of how we know one another, claiming to have met in Intro to Super Mario reenactments, which I seriously doubt is a real course at Wesleyan, ha, ha, ha. So Facebook users, is it more than a joke? Is it only a way to hang out and become popular by displaying your snarky sense of humor? Or is it something more than that? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And while your calls are coming in, you do go into one serious critique that makes Facebook sound like a negative thing, almost a lonely kind of thing, because you're right, Facebook purports to be a place for human connectivity, but it's made us more wary of real human confrontation. That's probably your most damning conclusion. Why do you write that?
Well, I mean, young people, well, first of all, just based on, this is all obviously from my experience. I went to a small college in a rural place where we were very isolated from the community, but we were really kind of constantly in one another's faces, really, and living in close quarters with all of our Facebook friends. And I've found that, you know, in talking to my friends and in my own experience, it's just so much easier to go onto this networking site and to really investigate the lives of the people who are sitting, you know, right next to us in the cafeteria, and use this tool to really get to know people through that way than really interacting in real life. And what's problematic with that is, like I said before, a lot of this stuff is fabricated. But a lot of it is true. I mean, I'm not going to say it's entirely all fiction, because it's really not. So sometimes it's hard to differentiate those two, and you really kind of end up with really incomplete views of what people are really about.
So it provides a kind of social connectivity, but also a kind of social distance from the people you'd otherwise have to deal with face-to-face.
Oh, absolutely. And you can imagine how that affects dating. I mean, someone might be interested in someone else and see that they are in a relationship, or they are, you know, have some other status, and then they have no interest in talking to the person. When, you know, back in, you know, an early human relationships, I mean, not even 10 years ago, you don't know anything about someone's status, and then you aren't.
You take a chance.
Inhibited about talking to them, and then you know.
Joe in Ridgewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Hi, love your show.
Thanks.
My wife and I started a club in Ridgewood on MySpace because we had just moved to New York from Ohio, and we were having trouble meeting young people our age, and mostly the neighborhood is older Russian and Polish families, and we made like 40-some friends that are in the neighborhood on MySpace. But every time we try to have get-togethers and we try to invite everybody out to a bar or go bowling or something, nobody comes out. And they have all these people that sign up that are excited to be on the MySpace, but then when we ask them to come out and hang out and have fun in real life, we have a lot of trouble doing that.
That's interesting. So that kind of backs up the theory. Thanks for calling, Joe. Then there's the Facebook-style social networking site specifically for grown-ups. There are many, but one is for co-op owners. How's this for New York-style networking? It's called LifeAt. It's COO Matthew Goldstein joins us now. Again, a Facebook-style social networking site specifically for co-op owners. And Matthew Goldstein joins us in addition to Alice Mathis, who is a recent Dartmouth grad and wrote that damning article about Facebook, or at least dismissive article, in the New York Times recently. Matt, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
What is LifeAt?
LifeAt is a private social community for residential properties across the United States.
Who uses it?
Well, you mentioned co-ops, but we don't just focus on co-op owners. We also have condo owners, renters, all across, like I mentioned, the United States, major buildings in urban cities, as well as housing communities in the suburbs.
And what are the most common things people use it for?
Well, believe it or not, people want to get to know their neighbors these days. And, you know, as Alice mentioned earlier, you know, people are hiding behind the computer. But in our sense, it's better for us because right now people aren't going to just knock on your door and say hello to you. But we find that a lot of our residents are meeting each other in the lobby, in the elevators, and in the shared amenity space, and they don't know one another. So now we're sort of
so instead of talking to each other in so instead of talking to each other in the lobbies and the elevators, they go home and then talk to each other on LifeAt?
Well, LifeAt's a way to sort of, like I said, foster a sense of community within the building. And then once they become comfortable with one another, there's different, you know, avenues mm-hmm. that they can explore as far as meeting their neighbors and utilizing other things in the local community.
Do they post their photos?
Optional, but they can.
Do they Well, how do you, this is a business for you. What's your business model? How do you make money on neighbors talking to neighbors?
Well, I mean, we have you know, various ad placements throughout the site. But one of the biggest things that we do is we go around the communities where our LifeAd sites are, and we strike local deals for our LifeAd residents, and we provide them with added value benefits. So the local pizzeria wants to offer a deal to a specific building or community, mm-hmm. we'll be happy to advertise that deal for them.
So when people post their status, is it like fixing the sink again? The co-op board won't take responsibility for the plumbing, even though it's in a common area, things like that?
It's not so much that. But there are places where, you know, residents can share their thoughts and their concerns if our clients allow that type of communication to happen.
Because it's building run.
Exactly.
Facebook has the term poke, to poke your friends online, to get a reaction from them. What do LifeAd users do? Poke the super?
No, not really. But our site is built on resident-generated content. So, you know, in theory, the more the residents use our site, the better it will be.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Matt Goldstein is the COO of LifeAd, a social networking site for co-op owners and others. Let's take another phone call for Alice Mathis. Here's Nicole in Manhattan. Nicole, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment about the ways in which you can use MySpace or Facebook. That is very different, I think, for people outside of the college age group. So one of the things that I find it really useful for is that to get in touch with people you might not ever pick up the phone and spend an hour chatting with, somebody that you haven't seen in months and months. But you just want to be able to say, hi, what's new, what's happening? And you're much more able to do that nowadays than you would have been. So I find I keep in touch with people much more or in a much better way than I ever would have before.
Alice Mathis, what do you think?
Well, I'm with you on that. That's something that I am just beginning to experience as someone who is graduating from that environment where I was with most of my friends. And, you know, with the people who I am close to, it's a very good tool for staying in touch with people. That said, again, like, their updates and profiles are constantly ridden with this kind of silly business of things that I'm unsure if it's true that they're really dating someone who they claim to be, or you know, because they've established patterns of making stuff up. But yeah, and the thing is, it's also happened is my friends who have also graduated are now entering this world where they're Facebook friends with their bosses and with their coworkers, and so really they've cleaned up their acts in a lot of ways. There seems to be a responsibility of adulthood and a different way of behaving on Facebook once you kind of enter that sphere.
Alice Mathis, the recent Dartmouth grad who critiqued Facebook as really mostly a comedy site, not a real social networking site, in a New York Times op-ed. And here's somebody who wrote into us, who read your article, and this person says, you wrote in your op-ed that you lampooned the social networking tool by creating a profile called Chinese Food and then changed the profile setting so it announced Alice Mathis is in a relationship with Chinese Food. And then he writes, someone I know who is male created a profile of Albus Dumbledore and then said he was in a relationship with a Harry Potter character who author J.K. Rowling just outed this week. So just thought you'd like to know. Joan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I have found it interesting. I think that Facebook is actually much worse at and very weak at maintaining the kinds of intimate friendships that people have, I don't know, that maybe people post 35 are accustomed to. I've had friends actually refuse to become Facebook friends, saying, if I want to know how you're doing, I'm going to pick up the phone. And I have found, I spent 20 years working with English people, and I have found them actually much better on Facebook, better at maintaining relationships on Facebook and Facebook-style relationships than I have found American friends. And I wonder whether, I don't know, I mean, frankly, it seems sort of consistent with a sort of, performed intimacy that isn't quite as deep. Anyway, I just think that there does seem a consistency with what our host was suggesting in terms of, you know, it's serving in that sort of mid-space between those people you just kind of want to keep up superficially with, but it doesn't work as well for, you know, those sort of deeper kinds of things.
Alice, makes sense?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think we just need to take a personal responsibility for really not becoming too dependent on these tools to keep in touch with the people we really care about. I mean, it's nice to be polite and reach out to those people who are just kind of tangential friends with these tools, but really, you know, if you care about someone enough, you should really make the effort. So,
Barbara in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My son is 14 years old, and we've been going back and forth about whether he should have a Facebook page. And one of the things he pointed out, he's a freshman in high school, was that the Facebook friends don't interact at school. So the child who has all these friends listed, he doesn't speak to, you know, 75% of them. They don't interact. So it's kind of, he thought it was really odd. Those friends are not what he considers to be real friends. And I also know that sometimes there's just getting the number count up of the number of friends. So it's something other than a real connection. The purpose of it isn't totally to connect with somebody as to be competitive as I have more friends than you. But
how old is your son? He's in college?
No, he's 14. He's a freshman.
Oh. Uh-huh, and he actually feels frustrated by social isolation or limitation caused by Facebook, you're saying.
Well, he doesn't have a Facebook page, and we've been going back and forth because I've said, you know, what's the purpose? Would you take your picture and put it on a poster all over town? You know, I don't understand what the purpose of it. And one of the things he was reflecting on was that the Facebook friends don't interact at school. They don't speak to one another. You know, he sees them listed on his friends' pages, but he knows that at school they never speak to one another.
Interesting. Thank you, Barbara. And Tamara in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hey, Tamara.
Hi, it's Tamara.
I'm sorry.
I just want to express that as a recent college grad, I'm really grateful that I get to keep in touch with a lot of my classmates, however superficially, but my frustration echoes what Nicole said earlier, that a lot of people rely on it now. For example, you know, write to cancel plans on Facebook message or call to ask you out, or sorry, rather write to ask you out on Facebook. And I think it's made cowards of a lot of us. No one knows how to pick up the phone and say,
"Made
so
cowards."
I'm not gonna be there, or, "Hey, I thought you were great. Can I take you out?" It all happens on Facebook, and it's kind of sad.
Tamara, thank you. We just have 10 seconds for last word, Alice. Did it make your friends cowards?
I really agree with what Tamara just said, and I think that we just need to take a personal responsibility for being using this tool in a way that benefits our relationships and isn't cowardly.
Alice Mathis, you just got out of Dartmouth, and you got your first op-ed piece in the New York Times. Some people try for decades. Congratulations.